ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're reading from the ninth canto, chapter 10, entitled The Pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, and we're reading from text 23. Evam Shipam Danushi Sanditam Utsasarga Banam Savagam Ivatad Ridayam Bibeda Saurid Vaman Dasamuke Nyapatad Vimanat Daheti Jalpati Jane Sukriva Riktaha So the word for word, evam, in this way, shipam, chastising Ravana, danushi, on the bow, sanditam, fixed an arrow, utsasarga, released towards him, banam, the arrow. Saha, that arrow. Vagram iva, like a thunderbolt. Tatridayam, the heart of Ravana. Bibeda, pierced. Saha, he. Ravana. Asrik, blood. Vaman, vomiting. Dasamuke, through the 10 mouths. Nyapatat, fell down. Vimanat, from his airplane. Haha, alas, what happened? Iti, thus, Jalpati, roaring, Jane, when all the people present there, Sukriti Iva, like a pious man, Riktaha, when the results of his pious activities are finished. So the translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The translation. After thus rebuking Ravana, Lord Ramachandra fixed an arrow to his bow, aimed at Ravana and released that arrow, which pierced Ravana's heart like a thunderbolt. Upon seeing Ravana's followers Upon seeing this, Ravana's followers raised a tumultuous sound, crying, "Alas, alas, what has happened? What has happened?" As Ravana vomited blood from his 10 mouths, fell from his aeroplane, just as a pious man falls to earth from the heavenly planets when his results of his pious activities are exhausted. The purport. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 21, it is said, Shine punya macha lokam vishanti. When the results of their pious activities are exhausted, those who have enjoyed in the heavenly planets fall again to earth. The fruitive activities of this material world are such that whether one acts piously or impiously, one must remain within the material world according to different conditions. For neither pious nor impious actions can relieve one from Maya's clutches of repeated birth and death. Somehow or other, Ravana was raised to an exalted position as the king of a great kingdom with all material opulences. But because of his sinful act of kidnapping Mother Sita, all the results of his pious activities were destroyed. If one offends an exalted personality, especially the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one certainly becomes most abominable. Bereft of the results of pious activities, one must fall down like Ravana and other demons. It is therefore advised that one transcend both pious and impious activities and remain in the pure state of freedom from all designations. Sarva padi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmanam. When one is fixed in devotional service, he is above the material platform. On the material platform, there are higher and lower positions. But when one is above the material platform, he is always fixed in a spiritual position. Sagunan sam ditayetam brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Ravana or those like him may be very powerful and opulent in this material world, but theirs is not a secure position, because after all, they are bound by the results of their karma. Karmana deva netrena. We should not forget that we are completely dependent on the law of nature. Prakriti kriyamanani gune karmani sarvashe ahankara vimud atma kataham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, verse 27. One should not be proud of one's exalted position and act like Ravana, thinking oneself independent of material nature's laws. Om Jnana Timidandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Jaitanya Manobhistam Stabitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Namom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschacharya Satarine Vanchakalpa Charubhyasya Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gauravaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I'll just read the verse again. After thus rebuking Ravana, Lord Ramachandra fixed an arrow to his bow, aimed at Ravana, and released that arrow, which pierced Ravana's heart like a thunderbolt. Upon seeing this, Ravana's followers raised a tumultuous sound, crying, "Alas, alas, what has happened? What has happened?" As Ravana vomited from his 10 mouths, fell from his aeroplane, just like a pious man falls to earth from the heavenly planets when the results of his pious activities are exhausted. So thank you to the devotees allowing me this opportunity. I was always actually inspired by His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj. There was one clip where Maharaj says that whenever Prabhupada asked him to do something, he just said yes, and then later on he would figure out how to do it. So for some reason, I also just said yes to this, and now I'm thinking, why did I say yes? But thank you to the devotees for allowing me this opportunity, and I'm seeking everyone's blessings to say something of relevance, especially there's so many senior devotees here, so hopefully I can say something of relevance for us all. So after 14 years of Ram being in exile, he then comes back to Ayodhya. We all know about, you know, the celebration, the festivities of him coming back to Ayodhya. And then the first time after 14 years of him meeting his mother comes to him and says, "I hear that you have killed Ravan." And then Ram says to his mother, "I have not killed Ravan. I did not kill Ravan." And then the next moment, Ram says, "I killed Ravan." So the mother's like, "What is he saying? You know, is he pagal? Is he crazy? What's going on?" So then he goes, "I did not kill Ravan. I killed Ravan." So what he was explaining is that actually, I personally am not the cause of Ravana's death. Because he was so encapsulated in the false ego, in himself, the concept of I is what killed him. Ravan himself, he couldn't just stop at having a kingdom. He couldn't stop at having many wives. He couldn't stop at having many servants. He then had to take Lord Ram's wife. He then had to expand and try and act on deeper elements of lust. So we see that the world is actually encompassed very much by this mentality, isn't it? This mentality that I need more, my enjoyment, my lust, my, you know, whatever satisfies my needs. So this is a big element of what is being described here so elegantly as well. It's amazing that actually Shukadev Goswami in this verse, he's encapsulating the highest positions in this world, in the material universe, and also the lowest positions. He's talking here about Ravana, who's just been killed by Ram. It's a short Ramayana in here. So he's talking about Ravana, who's the most abominable person, trying to take Ramachandra's wife with the mentality of enjoying her. So he's talking about the lowest grade of person, someone that's trying to take the enjoyment of the Lord. And then Shukadev Goswami is so amazingly saying also the position of those who are in the heavenly planets, those who are in the highest place in this material universe, the highest realm that's possible. And he's saying that both of them are temporary. Both of them are going on. Both of them are temporary. So don't get attached to anything. So when he says it in such an elegant way, it makes us think, what am I really attached to, isn't it? What is there? If there's not anything good in this world, and there's not anything really that bad in this world, then what am I striving for? Maybe I should strive for something higher. So we'll discuss that a little bit today. So it's interesting, actually just before I came to Vrindavan, I was with one devotee, and he's in the army. So I said to him, like, what are some of your like reflections? What are some of your thoughts that come from being in the army? So he said to me, actually, the first thing that I have learnt is as soon as you think there's a spy in the army, you report it. As soon as you have a suspicion there's a spy, you report it. He said, because the quickest way you can close down an army, the quickest way you can make a whole army collapse, is if there's a spy inside who from inside corrupts the whole army and shuts it down. So he said, and then he linked it to the verse in the Gita where Krishna is explaining to Arjuna, "Kama esha krodha esha rajaguna samud bhava," where he's explaining to Arjuna that actually it is only lust which is our eternal and our greatest enemy in this world. He says this word, "Vairinam," the greatest enemy, not even like a small enemy, the greatest enemy. And the thing is that this enemy, this spy, is within. It's also aroused by externals, but it's also within us. So it can shut down the devotional life in a very quick way. So we see that actually in Ravana, that element of lust was aroused within him. And how was it aroused within him? It was actually aroused by Shravanam and Sangha. So Shravanam, because how did he hear about Mother Sita? He was happy in his kingdom. He was okay in his kingdom. But then Shupanika, his sister, comes, tells him about Ram. She herself was lusty over Ram, over Lakshman. She herself had that desire to be with them. But she couldn't satisfy that. So therefore she comes back, and as we know, the Gita is telling us that actually from lust quickly, it transforms into anger. Kama krodha bijayate. It quickly transforms into anger. So therefore she comes back unsatisfied, frustrated in her endeavors, and therefore she goes to Ravana and tells him, "This is what happened, but you will not believe it, I met the most beautiful woman there possible. She makes your princesses look like nothing." So therefore that lust from her transferred into him, it aroused his need that he couldn't stop where he was at. He now had to go and take her. But even before that, there was a spark of lust aroused in him. Even before that, when his mother was speaking to him about his half-brother, the half-brother Kuvera, that he was in charge of Lanka. He had that Pushpak Viman. And Ravana, just hearing about this, immediately thought, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if this person is my brother. It doesn't matter who that person is. I want that. So he went beyond any sort of moral boundaries. So this is what lust is. This is what lust really does. It takes us away from the ability to be moral. It takes us away from that ability to even exhibit some element of kindness, some basic kindness to those that we are naturally meant to love. His brother, his sons, whoever it was, if they got in the way of his enjoyment, then they were finished. Then he was willing to actually forego any sort of formal relationships, any sort of like boundaries, he was willing to break that off. So Ravana, he himself was actually, he was in this concept of me, mine, of looking at himself and assessing his success through sense perception. If I have more gold, I am successful to others. If I have more wives, I am successful to others. If people bow down to me, I am successful to others. Therefore, as soon as he had taken Mother Sita, as soon as he had her, and he knew that the war was about to start, he became very hesitant. Then he became worried. Then he had all of his spies going and checking how is Lord Ram's army forming? What is going on? Tell me the updates. I need to also prepare, you know? And he said that they came back and they said to him, "You don't want to know how big Lord Ram's army is." His spies are saying this. So then he said, "Okay, just tell me." And he says, they said, "It's one Maha Ogre." So you think Vrindavan has many monkeys. There's 45,000 monkeys here. But one Maha Ogre is one with 64 zeros behind it. There's a lot of monkeys. So Ravana, he became a bit worried. He now started thinking, like, let me go around and try and make some allies. And that didn't go so well either. Because everyone knew, like, why fight against Lord Ram? Like, you're doomed. So then he went and saw Bali Maharaj in his planet, which is just below Earth. He went and saw him and he said the situation to Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj says to him, like, you know, "I'm old. Like, I'm not going to fight anymore. Like, it's not my place." And then he said, "But anyway, let me give you a gift. You have come to my planet, I'll receive you well, here's a gift." He takes him into the courtyard, and there's this gigantic mountain of gold there. So Ravana's thinking, like, okay, this is a nice gift, like, yeah, I'll take this. So then Bali Maharaj goes, "Okay, you can take it, like, you know, pick it up and take it with you. You know, you're Ravana, you're the great, ruler of Lanka." Ravana goes and tries to grab this mountain of gold.
and he can't even move it an inch. He's struggling and struggling and struggling. Then Bali Maharaj says to him, Ravana, look at this mountain of gold. What does it look like to you? And Ravana says, actually, now that I'm looking at it, it looks like an earring. And he says, Bali Maharaj says, do you know whose earring this is? He says, this is Hiranyakashipu's earring from the previous yuga. And he said, he was defeated by Vishnu. Give up. Give up. Don't fight with Ram. This is also the same Lord. Why are you fighting with him? Go and surrender unto him. So he was warned about him. Yet he was thinking, no. My lust, my needs, my enjoyment is far greater. I can't show my weakness to someone. I can't show my reality. I can't bow down to someone else. So this was the mentality he had. He wanted to take what is Krishna's, what is Lord Ram's, use it for himself and exploit it. He wanted to replace Ramachandra, in essence. It's interesting, like when the communism was going on in the Russian countries, do you know what their motto was? Their motto was, we will do what God did not do. What God cannot do, we will do. So this was the mentality that was there, that, you know, we are God. We will show you how supreme we are. You will bow down to us. You will be our servants. You will, you know, forget about Krishna, whatever it is. Somehow we're fortunate. We're in Vrindavan, so it's natural to have that that side. So this lust, Ravana from unlimited sources was gaining it. And he was gaining so much crowd, so much anger. But nothing could fulfill it. Nothing could satisfy him. Nothing could fulfill it. And ultimately, here we're hearing about when Rama is actually piercing his heart. He's cleansing him of all the sins that he's done. And actually, Ravana, so he started his fall down, he started his death from the process of hearing from the wrong persons, from the process of sangha with the wrong persons. In the Gita, actually, it says the word sangha, usually we take it as association, or like people that we associate with. But actually in this verse, where it's talking about the process of fall down, where it says, sangha teshu pajayate. So teshu pajayate is talking about your senses. It's talking about the senses are contemplating on the sense objects, becoming attached to them. So the word sangha is actually meaning attachment. It's people that we value, people that we become close to, people that you let into your core circle, people that you let their concepts come into our heart. So because he had let the wrong person's concepts and words affect him, penetrate his heart, therefore he was bound to do wrong. Whatever goes in will be churned and therefore lead to some sort of action, isn't it? So He himself wasn't satisfied. Later on in the next few verses, we'll hear actually the consequences of what happens after this battle. And then we hear that actually Prabhupada gives this nice, the actual meaning of Ravana. And he says, Ravana, the name Ravana means one who makes others cry. One who makes others cry. And actually you will see that his whole life, he was based on the false ego, the concept of the false ego, and acting on this concept of lust. And therefore when someone does that, they also make everyone around them cry. There was interesting, one devotee I was hearing when he was giving one seminar, and he was talking about this concept of lust. And he said the situation of the world is that actually there's fake smiles everywhere and real tears. So I thought, wow, that's interesting. Fake smiles, but real tears. And he said, this is actually what lust does. It makes you smile, it makes you feel like, makes you put on a show, but internally you're crying. Inside you're crying. And because you're willing to put your others, any significant others, at risk, or bypass them, or not look out for them, you'll also make them cry. They will also cry. So, amongst all of this in the Ramayana, after the whole battle has happened, then Ram, Sita, Lakshman, all the monkeys as well, they all go back to Ayodhya, and we hear about this in a few verses' time. It's interesting, this Pushpak Viman that Ravana has, that it's now being described that he falls down from. Soon, then Ram boards on that same Viman to go back to Ayodhya. And the reason that Ravana, when he first heard about this, was so like infatuated with it, was because, one, it just goes at the speed of your mind, and it goes in the direction that your mind wants. So that's what is based on. Your desire, this Viman will get you there. It'll be good in India as well, something that quick. And the other thing is that no matter how many passengers you have, it will either expand or it will shrink to that size. So it says straight after the battlefield, Ram boards on this, and you know what he does? He goes over the whole battlefield, and all those monkeys that are lying there, he then restores them. He brings life back to them. He resurrects them. And they also join him on that Viman and go back to Ayodhya. So then many people ask, like, okay, so he's restoring anyone that's on that battlefield. What about all the demons? So Ravana was so infatuated with his false ego that it's described that he himself had a policy that if anyone on my side dies, take their body and throw it in the ocean. Because he didn't want anyone to know that his side was being defeated. He didn't want anyone to see that, you know, we're losing people. Don't lose hope, don't lose faith. I'm still your Lord, he's thinking. Or he's telling his team. So this was his mentality, that he was always trying to perceive himself with the false ego and also exhibit it to many others. Now the opposite of him, it's described that when Lord Ramachandra and the devotees, they get back to Ayodhya, they go to the ashram of Agastya Muni. And then Agastya Muni describes the opposite of Ravana. And he says the real hero of this war is actually Lakshman. He said because he has defeated the strongest person in the battle, Indrajit, Ravana's son. He said Indrajit, he could only be defeated by a person who has been a brahmachari for 14 years, someone who hasn't slept for 14 years, someone who hasn't eaten for 14 years. So even Lord Ram, when he heard this, Agastya Muni is saying, Ram, you couldn't have done this. So even when Lord Ram hears this from Agastya Muni, he's thinking like, Lakshman? Like, he's brahmachari? No, I don't think so. And then he's thinking like, also he's eaten. I've given him food. So then Agastya Muni explains to him that actually for 14 years he was completely celibate. He would only even look at just the feet of Mother Sita. He wouldn't rise above that. It's a complete brahmacharya he was following. And then Ram says, but what about the food? I was giving you fruit every single day. So then Lakshman says, actually, you kept giving me fruit and you kept saying, here, take this. But you never commanded me to eat it. You never told me I'm allowed to eat it. You never gave me that permission. So I've got all the fruit, but I never ate any of it. So then this kind of situation goes on, and then also he's explaining that he was always guarding them at night. So he was never sleeping. He was always alert. He was always thinking, what if someone attacks? So Lakshman was always in this mood of being hungry for service. He was always thinking about his service and so absorbed in that it didn't matter about sleep, it didn't matter about food, it didn't matter about his own needs, anything. He was only thinking, how do I serve Lord Ram better? So it's interesting, like, these two kind of mentalities that are there. And through Lakshman, we hear, like, what a real devotee is like. What is a real Mahabhagavat like? Obviously, he's, you know, Balaram, he's Krishna himself, an expansion of him. So, the transcendental Lord. But he's showing this side that he's always thinking how to serve others, how to give the mercy out to others. And this is what this is the value of a real devotee of the Lord, that what they can actually take from this. That how do I myself always think how to serve the Lord? How do I always try and exhibit mercy to others? Once, like I was once traveling with my spiritual master, and I was traveling with him for like 2 months. So it went nice, and then the last day of the travels, so Maharaj got this massive, like so many fruits, so many nuts, and so much donated to him the night before he was leaving. So then in the morning he was given the Bhagavad Gita class, and then he told me just offer this. He has a small Giriraj deity. So he said, please offer all of it to him. So, you know, like I come from like a Indian background, Gujarati background. So, you know, we take like a little portion of it, kind of offer it to the deities, and then assume that everything's offered. So I did that because there was so much of it there. And then later on, Maharaj came back and he goes, so did you offer it all? So I said, yeah, Maharaj, I've offered it all. He goes, how did you offer it all? So I said, you know, I took like a little bit of each thing and I presented it in front of the deities, offered it and put it back in. And he goes, ah, oh, you are Kali Yuga. He goes, I told you to offer everything, put it all in front of the Lord, you know, get his glance on every little bit of it. He goes, you've ruined it. And then I was just like, okay, just be quiet now. I'll just be quiet, sit in the corner. And then Maharaj was just eating his breakfast. And then he goes, do you know what your problem is? And then I was thinking, oh no, like, why now? Like, there's some of my godbrothers are there as well. So then he goes, do you know what your problem is? He said, your problem is, you're not thinking how to give the most mercy to everyone. And then that really penetrated my heart. And I thought, wow, I'm not thinking how to give the most mercy to everyone. So this is what Ram in the whole of the Ramayana is doing. We see that he's time after time he's showing how to personify Dharma. We see how much mercy he's given to others. In the next few verses we'll hear that actually after Ravana, there's so many Ravans and Rams, after Ravana is dead. Then Ram tells Vibhishan, do his last sacrifices, do his last rites, because he is actually condemned to the lowest hells for what he has done. But you do that and he'll be eradicated from that hellish life. What he's meant to get. So even then he's given mercy to people. Can you imagine someone's just stolen your wife or your husband? And for a whole year, they just tried to endlessly allure them into trying to get them to enjoy with you. And then, even then, you're thinking, how do I get this person out of hell? How do I benefit this person? So when I was looking at this verse, it's a very, very nice verse. It brings a lot of solace to us that finally Ravana is dead. When I was looking at this, I was thinking there's two types of mentalities. Ravan is one who has taken what is Krishna's. He has taken what is Lord Ram's and he's trying to enjoy it for himself. Lakshman is the other side. Lakshman is everything, the source is from Krishna. Therefore, let me use what's in this material world and let me use it in his service. Let me use it for his pleasure. Forget my needs. Let me use it for his pleasure. And then I will also be happy because he is happy. As long as he is happy, then it's fine. So I was thinking, Ravan, he is basically personifying the mentality of being intoxicated by the false ego. Like when you take initiation, we say the four regulative principles. But then there's also a subtler side to it, isn't it? It's not just the gross activities that, okay, I won't take intoxications, the drugs, the drinks, etc. like that. There's also the subtle side of it. What really intoxicates us? Sense enjoyment, the false ego, pride, all of these things. And therefore, we have the option of either removing it ourselves and allowing the Lord to reside in the heart, or allowing time to endlessly pierce our hearts through difficulties, frustrations, etc. I don't think Ram will come and pierce our hearts, but he says, Kalos me, I am time. Through the time factor, he'll make sure everything happens, he'll make sure everything, everything that we're due, all the humbling we're due, etc., that will come to us naturally. So only we ourselves, through introspection, through asking devotees, we know exactly what our false ego is prone to. We know the difficulties that we have. We know different things that make lusty desires within us. Maybe it's one or two more rasgulas. I don't know like what it might be. But whatever it is, we know ourselves. And the question that we have to think ourselves is, how will I overcome that now? What am I going to actively do to overcome that? How am I going to take something away from the Bhagavatam to reflect in my life of how not to become like Ravan? The little fine things that make me enjoy for myself, and how do I take that mood of Lakshman, of Balaram, and take that away? So these were just a few thoughts that I had. We ourselves know what's affecting us, and through the devotees association, just as Ravana was brought down, we get brought up through listening to them, through their association, through attachment to them, we get brought up. So I'll just end on one thing that His Holiness Sachinanda Maharaj recently said, and this is to link to like introspecting about what are anathas and how to progress onwards. So he said very recently, he said, sometimes the right questions are even more important than the answer, because they set us on the path where we eventually find deeply satisfying insights. I'll say it once more. So sometimes the right questions are even more important than the answers, because they set us on the path where we eventually find deeply satisfying insights. So just knowing the philosophy is nice, but having the right questions of how to apply it, how do I overcome these tendencies, that's what we really need in our lives. So these are just a few small thoughts. Sorry if there was anything incorrect or anything said out of place. Is there any questions, queries, or comments as well? Very good.
Thank you, Shesha. I have a small question. But first I want to make a comment. I just want to thank you so much for invoking the memory of my beloved spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada's servant, Tamal Krishna Goswami. And you did it in that context of this statement that you repeated, that the world is full of false smiles but real tears. And I remember my spiritual master once giving a talk where he used this phrase, walking weeping, to talk about the condition of the world. The same idea, everyone is walking through the world pretending, but inside they're weeping. Mm. So my question is really very simple. Such a memorable thing you described, the spiritual master saying, no, I told you everything, you are a creeper.
His Holiness Kadama Karana Maharaj.
Thank you very much for wonderful.
Thank you. Hopefully one day I'll be a disciple.
So you emphasized at the beginning of the class on I mentor. So can you give some practical suggestions as to how we can remind ourselves on a daily basis, because this is a common disease that we all suffer. Mm. So how can we remind ourselves not to be a lying
mentor? Mm. No, thank you. Very, very good question. There was once, once Srila Prabhupada, he was in an assembly to hundreds of people. and he was giving a seminar, and he was talking about Krishna so much. And then this one hippie was in the middle of the seminar, and he kept trying to put his hand up. And then Prabhupada just dismissed him. He just wouldn't give him the time of day. He wouldn't look at him. He just completely ignored him. And then at the end of the lecture, this hippie stood up. And he said, "Swamiji, Swamiji, I have a question." So I mean, like, how can you ignore someone then? So then Prabhupada looked at him and said, "Yeah, please, ask your question." So then this hippie just pointed at Prabhupada. He said, "You've been speaking about God so much. Can you see God right now?" So then, you know what Srila Prabhupada said? He said, "No, because you're standing in the way." So the idea being that even if we have a Mahabhagavat in front of us, like, is it enough? Actually, we have to have a favorable mentality, a favorable mood, isn't it? If we go and we just try and challenge the world, challenge people, actually, we're holding ourselves back. So the greatest thing we can do is, like in the morning, we have so many prayers we're offering to the deities, to Srila Prabhupada, to our gurus, and taking that humble attitude, that humble stance, it will always open us up to so many more opportunities, so many more devotional insights, so much more association of wonderful devotees. So having this mentality of I and mine very much limits us, and everyone knows that. Whereas opening ourselves up to learning from others, from taking a lower position, it helps us gain so much more wisdom, so much more blessings, mercy, by which we can make a change in our and make more progress in our spiritual life. What can I do in my own spiritual life? I'm useless. I need all of you, so. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Maybe one last question. Yeah. Is that, I hope that answers. Is that,
yeah. Yes. Normally you were speaking about the lust. Lust is the greatest enemy. So we see that we cannot find any solution for that. Although we look very innocent and everything, but the lust which is keeping on us, disturbing us. So how we are chanting and everything, what we are doing, but it doesn't go. So what is the process that how that we can conquer this lust enemy?
Sorry, say the last part.
Lust is the enemy. How we can conquer that lust?
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. So when Krishna is actually explaining the process of fall down for a devotee, for a conditioned soul, then just before that, then he says this verse, Tarni sarvani samyaya yukta ashita matparaha. So he's saying that actually yukta ashita matparaha, you fixate, you engage your senses in relation to me, matparaha, in relation to himself. So he's given this formula that actually anything we have, our senses, we control them, but we have a nice process. We can eat prasad. You like to sing, you can, or dance, you can go into kirtans, dance for Krishna, sing for Krishna. And then Prabhupada very nicely has encouraged us in so many ways that whatever your tendency were, find a way to do it for Krishna. I've forgotten the name of the devotee, but there was one disciple of his, and Prabhupada was saying, like, "What do you want to do for Krishna?" And the devotee said, "No, Prabhupada, what do you want me to do for Krishna?" And then Prabhupada said, "No, what do you want to do for Krishna?" So he went away for like a few hours, or maybe like a day or so, and then he came back. And then he told Prabhupada that we need madangas. So then he engaged his you know, that practical side of his. He started making madangas. And then over the whole world, those Balaram madangas were being produced and sent everywhere. So for us, we have a nice process that we can purify our senses and keep chanting, keep the association of devotees, and through them we'll have a fun, joyful life, but also have purifying way of latching onto Krishna in a solid way. Does that make sense? Yes, no?
Yes, you see, even I'm chanting. Yeah. But still the enemy is keeping on disturbing.
Hmm.
So that is the point which we cannot understand.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So yeah, so we have our own endeavors, and then the other side is getting more and more mercy from devotees, isn't it? More mercy from Prabhupada, more mercy from his disciples, from the other devotees, and that will be the special ingredient. That will be the saving grace for us, I guess. I'm hoping that's my saving grace. That's fine. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.